even when the odds were great, even when the road is long. Hope in the face of difficulty. Hope in the face of uncertainty. The audacity of hope. America, you've vindicated that hope these past 8 years. And now I'm ready to pass the baton and do my part as a private citizen. So this year, in this election, I'm asking you to join me to reject cynicism and reject fear and to summon what is best in us to elect Hillary Clinton as the next president of the United States and show the world we still believe in the promise of this great nation.
Night three, a lot of shouting, a lot of stomping and stamping. I don't know how many people are actually stamping. Were their stamps involved?
There were stampers.
Oh, these 2 weeks of conventions are killing me. It all depends on where you are, I suppose, where you are in life. You're either sick of it, can't take it anymore, and you're afraid of the future, or you're somebody that believes, yeah, we got a bunch of problems, but we got to fix the problems we have, and America at its core is still great. Let's go to Andrea Darlis live in Philadelphia.
Good morning, Steve and everyone.
Good morning. The mood in the room seemed to be obvious on TV. They all went to church last night. There was a lot of beating up on poor Donnie. Old DJ got him, got slapped around quite a bit last night. What did we miss for those of us who weren't there?
You know, it's interesting that you say in church, because that's kind of the impression that I got too. Last night's message really about how great America really already is, and preaching peace and love. Obviously President Obama talked about all of his accomplishments, all of his accolades. The mood in the room was unbelievable. I mean, it was almost, I described it to Patty last night, Steve, as electric. And when Obama came out, there was not a person sitting. It was like, you know, you go to a concert and there's a good song and people stand up and they start dancing and then they sit back down. Nobody sat during his speech. And I was up pretty high too. So we were all, kind of moving to the front, taking pictures, vlogging, tweeting. But it was electric. It was unbelievable.
Any of the speeches not get over?
Biden was great. Obama was great. Tim Kaine was good. But, you know, he's not an electric personality. He's very humble, which is good.
Too long. He was on too long.
I think so, too. I thought they would cut him because they were running behind.
You can't really hook the new VP. Hey, get off!
Right, especially when he's talking about his humble background and his parents and how he got his start. But I got to tell you, you know how you always tell politicians, don't be funny?
Yeah.
He kept imitating Donald Trump with that, believe me.
Yeah.
Believe me. He was a pretty good Donald Trump impersonation.
Yeah, but he got believe me wrong. The way Trump says it is, believe me, not believe me. There is a difference. Dave, say it.
There is a difference.
Dave, repeat after me. Believe me.
Believe me.
See, there's an inflection difference that's key. All right, now where are you headed now?
I am on my way to the Illinois delegation breakfast, and we are hopefully going to run into Senator Durbin and Congressman Gutierrez there, too.
And I'm expecting an exclusive interview with Mike Madigan as soon as you arrive.
I knew you were going to ask that. I had kind of this vision in my head of me approaching him and him running away. I don't know why that came into my head.
You can catch him. He's not that fast. he's not a youngster anymore. But when you go up to him, please tell him Steve Cochran would love to speak to him.
I certainly.
And then when security throws you out, call us back.
Okay, I will. I'll call you for my bail.
All right, hold on. That's Andrea on her way to the Illinois breakfast. She will go up to Madigan, and she will ask him to come on.
Sure.
And if he says yes, I will have to shift uncomfortably in my chair because monkeys will fly out of my butt. So we'll get some Illinois perspective. Meanwhile, Naomi Schaefer Riley has been on this program before, and we're happy to welcome her back. Weekly columnist for the New York Post, former Wall Street Journal editor. And her book, The New Trail of Tears, How Washington is Destroying American Indians, out and available everywhere. And you know how you are, Dave. You're careless. You'll lose a copy, so get two.
I certainly would.
Let me go to Naomi now. Naomi, I assume you saw every minute of it last night.
I watched a bunch of it. I saw Tim Kaine. I saw Obama. I think that report was pretty good. I think it was. People were pretty excited. There wasn't nearly as much division, I guess, They didn't show the protests outside, and I guess nobody wanted to yell over President Obama. So you didn't see as much of the division as you've seen in previous nights.
But isn't it true that if you are a firm believer in either side, you're already represented on TV in the last 2 weeks, and the people that are going to elect the next president, you know, it seemingly is going to be a very close election. I mean, those are the people who, I mean, they're really not sure. Maybe it is a little tough for them, but maybe they still believe in America. Maybe they're in both. They got a foot in both camps. I don't think we've seen in the last 2 weeks a fair representation of the bulk of the country.
Well, that's probably true, although, you know, the Democrats are sort of trying two messages at once. It's America's great, but, you know, on the first night, especially when you had Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, you also had, you know, America's great, but by the way, the system is stacked against you. So I think it's these are competing messages, and the Democrats are sort of trying to, you know, figure out exactly the right tone in order to both appeal to the disaffected and suggest that we don't need to be quite as dark as the Republicans are these days. But like I said, it seemed to be working last night.
Yeah, I thought the conventions, by comparison, if you're comparing them week to week, I think the Democrat show has been tremendous in comparison. Their speakers have been strong. Their message has been strong.
Music's been better.
You know what, though? Some awkward moments with the house band. The house band, somebody didn't get notes to the house band. Sometimes they play the wrong walk-up music. Yesterday, and I don't understand why no one in Trump's world could take his phone away for a week, because he keeps doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. And yesterday he holds this goofy press conference because he can't stand to be out of the spotlight. And he throws out this comment on Russia. And why don't you, hey, Russia, hey, interested in a little more hacking? Because if you can find Hillary's missing emails, that'd be swell. Well, I would say, what is he thinking? But I don't think he thinks.
I definitely don't think he thinks. I think that, his mouse is not attached to his brain. And I think your diagnosis is correct. He does not want to be out of the spotlight for very long. So he's willing to, you know, do anything to say, hey, look over here. But, yes, it's not just someone should have taken away his phone. You know, someone should have stopped him from holding that press conference. Or, you know, he could have released some prepared statement about, you know, what his reaction was to the Democrat speeches. But he would never do such a thing. It would be much too calm and too, too much forethought for him.
You're in the epicenter of Trump in New York. So what is the consensus of who has his ear? Because it seems to be Ivanka, his daughter. But does anybody really have him where they can go, stop being a jackass? Don't do what you're about to do. Or if you're about to have that urge, call me first. Does anybody have that for him?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I wish they did. But I mean, he just, you know, if having Mike Pence on the ticket, you know, can't sort of, put a little restraint into you, then I don't know what, you know, I mean, he seems to be kind of the model of it. But, you know, and he also has people like Giuliani. You can't imagine Giuliani is, you know, so restrained that he's not going to call Trump and say, stop being a jackass. I mean, he's not exactly someone who minces words.
Right.
So I assume that these people have tried and have gotten nowhere. And you know, if Ivanka is this, you know, has so much influence, I presume that, you know, she too would suggest he show some restraint. But so far, it doesn't seem to have worked.
This will end tonight, this DNC, and Hillary Clinton is in a very tough position. She's not a great speech giver. She's following some of the great speeches given at anybody's recent memory at conventions. And you never want to be a weak closing act. Can she damage herself by not giving a great speech tonight? In other words, do you remember the last thing you heard, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that she's going to damage herself. I mean, if it were all in one night, maybe. But I think sort of people will take the sum total of this week, assuming that they watched, you know, previous nights and they watched the president and they watched Michelle Obama's great speech. I think they'll take the sum total of it. And nobody is expecting any surprises from Hillary, you know, which is one of the reasons to vote for her, I guess,
yeah,
this election.
Right.
But she actually, I don't know, seems to me, and when she had her appearances over the weekend with Tim Kaine, seemed to me a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more confident. Now, obviously, that was before the email scandals broke, but I think, Kaine was a good running mate for her. I think it's made her seem a little bit more confident, like maybe she's not in this alone. And I think that as long as she doesn't sort of take that kind of, you know, she has these speeches where she feels like she's screaming at you. I think as long as she doesn't do that, I think we're all set. You know, Cory Booker kind of had that the other night where it seemed like he was trying to scream over the audience.
Right.
Even though, and for TV people, it came off sounding like, why is he just yelling at me? So I think, you know, if Hillary can just even get the volume and the tone right, I think she'll be all set.
Yeah, it's a great point you make, because they all should just watch Bill Clinton. You know, regardless of what you think of what Bill Clinton says, Bill Clinton basically sat down like your grandpa and you were sitting around at his feet and he just told you a story. The microphones work. Nobody needs to yell.
Yeah, no, and Obama, too. I mean, it's a very modulated tone. They know how to speak to the audience on TV, which is really the audience that matters here.
Yeah, exactly. Nice job by you, as always. By the way, the book, again, is The New Trail of Tears, How Washington's Destroying American Indians. It's an important summer read. I really mean this. You ought to pick this up, get this, get a couple of copies, maybe download a couple more, spread it around, give it to your friends. And it's,
well, if you want to know what a lot of big government will get you, it's what the Native Americans have right now. So that's how you can watch the Democratic Convention.
Pretty frightening stuff. Thanks. How do people follow you on social media?
I'm at Naomi S. Riley on Facebook as well. And they can get the book on Amazon or visit my website, NaomiRiley.com.
Enjoy the big final night. In the meantime, it's 6:19. Let's go.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Gian's Cochrane show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Good morning, Nick.
I need to know.
Good morning. What Nick,
new Jason Bourne movie this weekend. I'm excited about that, even though I don't know that I'm going to have time to go. I'm excited about the fact that it's out.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, too. One of the summer blockbusters that I really have some genuine excitement about. And the buzz is really, really strong on it. And, you know, the fact that Paul Greengrass, the director, and Matt Damon came back to the series, I think says a lot about how much they like the script and how excited they are about it. And the trailer just looks really exciting, really good.
Bad Moms would be the opposite end of this, so you could see your thriller and then you could also see your funny. I assume Bad Moms stays funny. Does it stay funny?
I haven't seen it, and I hear terrible things about
No.
it.
No.
Yeah, and when you hear from the when you hear from the writers of the Hangover trilogy, I immediately put up a red flag. But the cast is great. I mean, Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell, Catherine Hahn, Christina Applegate, all very, very funny women. And it's basically, you know, your vulgar, R-rated slob comedy, but with women doing the nasty stuff instead of guys.
Which seems to be
a trend this year, actually.
Does it get, you know, into that Judd Apatow bathroom joke situation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I saw the Red Band trailer, and that's exactly where it goes.
Oh, then I don't need to see this. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like the Mike and whatever Dave Need Wedding Dates, which was actually funnier than I thought it was going to be, but still not good. And like Neighbors, too, the big R-rated slob vulgar comedies that have been coming out, now they think they're putting a refreshing twist on it by having the women do all the gross stuff. So,
well, let me check that one off and go to Jason Bourne twice.
Well, yeah, I'm with you, man.
What is Nerve?
Nerve, it just came out yesterday, in fact, and it's with Emma Roberts and Dave Franco, and they play two people who get caught up in an internet viral social media game where they have to do different challenges that take them all across New York City over one night, and everybody is watching them live as it's happening. And it seems like an interesting premise. The trailer is interesting, and the guys who directed it are the guys responsible for the movie and the TV series Catfish. And it seems like a weird sort of departure for them, although it is about using the internet and social media to your advantage. So I just think it's kind of an interesting choice that these guys directed it.
One more. Don't Think Twice.
Yeah, this is the one, Steve. This is going to be great. I'm assuming that you know who that Mike Birbiglia is.
Yeah, I've done stand-up with him.
Yeah, he's a great stand-up comedian, and he's become a really good comedic filmmaker. He made Sleepwalk with Me, which is a really wonderful film.
Well, it's about an actual medical malady that he deals with. He has the worst type of sleepwalking. It's a very rare condition. And I haven't talked to him in a couple of years, but the last time I spoke to him, he was still sleeping in a restrictive sleeping sack that would keep him from being able to get up and walk around. Because at one point, early on as a comic, he got out of bed, walked out of the window of a second floor Ramada, and fell two floors and was badly cut up, bruised, and broke a few bones, I think. Ended up in a hospital. And he was diagnosed with this condition, which he's medicated for and all that. But the last I knew, he was still wearing like a sleeping bag to protect him from himself at night.
Yeah, that's scary stuff. Well, he ended up making a really wonderful romantic comedy with that
basis. Yes, he did.
But this one, Don't Think Twice, I'm so excited about this movie. It's going to be playing exclusively at the Music Box. And it is about the world of improv. It takes place in New York City, a very popular improv group. They're all really tight friends. One of them gets selected to go on to the show. Now, in the movie, it's not SNL, but we all know that it really is SNL. And it's about the dynamic that changes when they realize that nobody else is going to be as successful as this one person. Listen to the cast of people in this movie. Keegan-Michael Key is in it. Gillian Jacobs from Community is in it. Kate Micucci is in it. Mike Birbiglia, who also wrote and directed it. And it is a really, from what I understand, a very, very honest look at the world of improv. And I know that you know that world very well, Steve. And I cannot wait to see this. The trailer is great. And there's a very special thing happening. One of the producers of the movie is Ira Glass. And he is going to be live at the Music Box this weekend for a few screenings. And they're actually going to tape an episode of This American Life. As part of it. So it's going to be a fun weekend at the Music Box. That's the one that I'm really looking forward to most. That's not a big Hollywood, blockbuster.
And
that's the one.
You'll tell us how it is on Tuesday.
Monday morning. I'll tell you on your show how it is on Tuesday. Yes,
right. Ira Glass, by the way, does a thing when he comes out and does these live things like Jason Bourne, where he goes nuts and he beats somebody up.
That's right. He throat punches half the audience.
Yeah. Let me go to one contestant here, because we're super late as always, because that's what I do. Lori, are you ready to play Lollapalooza Band or a band I was in?
I am.
Lollapalooza Band or a band I was in, America's slowest growing game show. You can ask Dave, Mary, the producers, Vic, any of them for help, and obviously Nick on the phone. The band is Kashmir Cat. Kashmir Cat, is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
I'm going to ask Nick for help.
Nick, Kashmir Cat.
Nick?
What, did I put Nick on hold? What did I do with Nick? Yeah, put him on hold. That was smooth of me. Let me go back to Nick. Nick, sorry about that, buddy. Kashmir Cat. And now he's gone. What Nick would have said, for the interest of time, is that's a band at Lollapalooza, and you're a big winner. Wow, this is off to a flying start, man. This is exactly what I'd hoped for.
You confused her.
This is why it's America's slowest growing game show.
Mm-hmm.
I think you hung up on her.
Oh.
And then John's on hold, and Nick's not here.
The hell did I do?
I have no idea.
Nick was on the phone. He's gone. Is Lori still there?
The concept was good.
Kashmir Cat's actually a band at Lollapalooza. Yeah. How about I Want My Money?
Want My Money. Nah. No.
That's a band I was in?
Yes.
I say band at Lala.
Mary's correct. You won nothing. It's 6:32. Back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The Donald is not really a plans guy. He's not really a facts guy either.
Trump says he wants to run the nation like he's running his business? God help us. I'm a New Yorker, and I know a con when I see one.
Think about everything you learned as a child, no matter where you were raised. How can there be pleasure in saying you're fired? He's trying to tell us he cares about the middle class. Give me a break. That's a bunch of malarkey.
I love Vice President Biden. He's just, he's beyond it. You know, didn't you feel like he was going to go, come on, let's get him. Everybody in the car now.
He was so fired up. He was awesome.
642, Chuck Todd, the fine host of Meet the Press and a voice of sanity amidst all the insanity. Yeah, I like that intro. I think we'll write that one down. Here's Chuck. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine, and your Purple Heart is waiting for surviving 2 weeks of this after all the weeks of the campaign. On points, though, don't the Democrats get a better show score than the Republicans in Cleveland last week?
So far, but ultimately, you know, like anything, let's see where the race is beginning of next week. Then you decide which convention was more effective. But it certainly looks like that it's a more watchable, the Democrats have put on a, they're trying to get more people to watch what they're doing. It feels as if, I mean, part of it was because so many people didn't want to participate in Trump's convention, but he had a harder time creating four compelling nights. He got a couple of compelling nights, but I think definitely the Democrats have topped them on the speaker front, that's for sure.
Hillary's in a tough spot, right? Because she's got to follow four, five, six great speeches over the course of those nights. But she is the candidate,
Look, the good news for her is she's never been thought of as giving a great speech, right? So the bar is low. I think this is a difficult bar for her, considering everything that happened. But I would argue that I think last night was more important to her campaign than anything she says tonight. I mean, she can't blow tonight, but I think last night was a pretty important night. And it was the most effective anti-Trump night I've seen. If you think about it, it's the most credible people in basically the center-left movement. Michael Bloomberg, Leon Panetta, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, all of them, of the leaders inside the center-left movement, the most trusted in there. And they handed their credibility and served as character witnesses for Hillary Clinton and against Donald Trump. If this doesn't move numbers for her and against him, then nothing they say can.
Yeah, and even the most ardent Trump supporter, I'm here to tell you, there's nothing that was said, no matter how amped up it was last night, about Trump that wasn't factual. He's not ready. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and he continues to prove it every day.
You know, the one thing I was thinking, though, listening to all that and listening to all the praise of her experience, right, is that there is a big chunk of voters in this country who think the people that have been leading it are why they're in the position that they're in today. And so the more, and so what happens is the more you make the case that he doesn't know what he's doing and he's not ready for the job, the more they say, oh, yeah, but what has all this experience gotten me? You know, I know that sounds irrational some, but I think that was one thing that was running through my head last night is I was watching a whole bunch of Democrats feeling good about themselves and all that stuff. You're just sitting in your head. Okay, they're doubling it. And now, I'm a believer and you run on who you are. Don't try to be something you're not. And, you know, she can't really run as somehow some outsider, some change agent, right?
Sure.
So you sort of have to double down on this. But there is a risk to it, you know, and that's the risk.
Yeah, and I think as we get closer to November, anybody that's not firmly one way or the other just has to make a decision. Okay, if I really, really dislike Hillary and I really, really dislike the position the country's in, am I going to turn it over to this guy? Because that's what I'm doing. I'm giving him the keys, and that's pretty scary.
I have to say that was one of the more clever lines that the president spoke was when he said, I watched the convention in Cleveland and there wasn't much there that was Republican or conservative. That was a signal. Right. That was him saying, hey, I'm not going to try to tarnish the rest of the Republican Party, which some Democrats aren't going to be happy with that the president did that. That basically the president says, no, I know that Trump isn't a Republican and I know that Trump isn't a conservative.
Right.
So he's essentially giving a permission slip to the Paul Ryans and all those folks and saying, hey, we know this isn't who you guys are now. So what does that mean? That means maybe it's trying to say, hey, Republicans, you can come over for this election. We know it really doesn't count. We know it doesn't mean you're suddenly supportive of Democrats. We know that we're all banding together to stop Trump.
Maybe that's Hillary's key tonight. She walks out, she holds the microphone out at arm's length. She says, not Trump, drops the mic and leaves.
Well, that's one way to try to win the presidency. I don't think it's – she needs to get out there and be for something. Say, you know, she does have a few pressure points. I'll be curious to see. Does she draw a permanent line in the sand on TPP. There are a couple things that she may still have to do some business to reassure this chunk of Bernie supporters that are still skeptical of her. I mean, and this TPP stuff, it resonates in this hall. I don't know if it resonates out in the country, but it resonates in this hall.
Before you run, and thanks for all the extra time as always, and you know, listen, you don't need to hear this from me, but you've been killing it on this entire coverage in this whole year. But
I thought I'd see you in person out here.
Yeah, you know what? We sent Andrea because she had to be punished. All right, so
there you go.
So here's
a pleasure.
So here's the thing that was most striking about yesterday in regards to Mr. Trump. Not so much that he said the thing about Russia. Hey, if you want to go see if you can find those emails and try to sell them to the media, that might be a good thing. The fact that he thought it was okay to say it. I think that's the distinction, and that's the frightening part.
I just say you don't want Putin involved in the elections, even if you secretly do. Mm-hmm. But to even leave that out there is a question. And I know this morning, I guess he did an interview late last night with Fox and Friends. This morning it's out there. He's saying, I was just being sarcastic. I don't believe Putin's a great leader. I just simply said he was a better leader than Obama. He's trying to kind of walk it back. But to me, this is like David Duke stuff, man. There's no like subtle walk back when it comes to Putin and the idea of interfering with elections. It is just, this is outrageous. It is. Go read Mike Pence's statement. Go read the statement that your own campaign put out in the name of Mike Pence and just say it over and over again. All right? There is just, it doesn't matter. If Russia's trying to get involved in our elections, it doesn't matter. It is a bipartisan condemnation, period. End of story. And why he didn't, it should disturb a lot of people that he's still left that open. I don't understand it. And he should, who's the pro-Putin constituency? That's what I don't get here. where is it? Am I missing it in Colorado? Is it the key carrying the state of Iowa?
That's fantastic. Yeah, NBC hasn't pulled that, the pro-Putin constituency.
No, I didn't know that was a demographic I needed to look up.
Thank you, Chuck Todd. Great stuff. Meet the Press Sunday. You back home on Sunday?
I'll be back home.
All right. We'll see you live from Washington. That's Chuck Todd. Meet the Press. The pro-Putin constituency. That's very strong. Yeah. If we can find those people, we'll let you know where they are, and we'll build a wall around them. Andre Darling standing by in Philly, and we'll play another round. One that actually works, of Lollapalooza band or a band I was in. So if you want to win, get on the phone now at 312-981-7200. Back to Philadelphia. Andre Darling, are you at the Illinois Breakfast now?
I am at the Illinois Breakfast right now. I've seen your friend, House Speaker Michael Madigan.
What's he doing right now? Can you see him?
You know what he's doing? Okay, so they're setting up for this breakfast. The breakfast is outside of the meeting room. So you go into the meeting room and there's chairs set up and there's a big long table up at the front. Nobody's sitting up there yet because they're still having breakfast. And he's up there with someone by him, I think probably warding all of us off. But I promise you, after this interview, after you and I talk, I am going to go up to him and pass along your message to him.
Just walk behind him. Just walk behind him and mumble my name over and over again. Just go behind him and go, Steve Cochran, and then walk away and then come back behind him and do it again.
Okay, I will, but I'll probably do that at the end so I don't get thrown out. Because there's some really good speakers today, Steve.
No, I'm not. Listen, don't get thrown out. All right, you talked to Congressman Quigley?
I did. I talked to Congressman Quigley. He said last night was great. The sentiment this morning, Steve, that people didn't really get a lot of sleep last night because the speeches went so late. And then the Wells Fargo Arena was kind of put on a little bit of a lockdown while Secret Service evacuated the president safely. So he was a little tired, but I asked Congressman Quigley what he expects to hear from Hillary Clinton tonight.
Tell us what you expect to hear tonight from Hillary Clinton.
Look, I expect to see enthusiasm and a historic announcement. And let's just remember, you know, lost in the milieu of all this crazy campaign that we've had. 8 years ago, we nominated and elected the first African-American president of the United States. Our country has the opportunity to elect the first woman president of the United States. That's not to be understated. And I think it's an exciting moment for our nation's history. However anybody feels about the issue, I think it shows progress.
great speeches last night from Joe Biden, President Obama, even Tim Kaine. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, people said Tim Kaine's boring and, tapioca, I heard. I think he showed last night he's a very dynamic candidate.
I've never heard anyone described as tapioca before. Tapioca? Is tapioca a boring pudding in your pudding world? Is that one of your more boring puddings?
Yeah, if you describe someone, I love vanilla, but, that someone kind of described as maybe someone with a not-so-dynamic personality, vanilla or tapioca, meaning kind of bland. But, again, I'm a vanilla fan, so that was what he had to say. Dick Durbin's going to speak today, Steve. Rahm Emanuel, Tony Preckwinkle, and Jan Schakowsky.
Well, you say hi to all my friends, and remember, walk up behind Mike Madigan and go, Steve Cochran says hello, and then just keep walking.
I will indeed.
All right, more from you coming up. Tapioca?
Yeah, tapioca finished sixth in the pudding top 25 last year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Preseason tapioca is eighth this year.
That's the rankings that you have them now.
That's what I've seen.
Is it a Lala band?
Let's go to Chris and let's play Lollapalooza or a band I was in. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Chris, this is America's slowest growing game show. Welcome to it. We have some fabulous prizes. I'll give you a band name. You tell me if it's a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in. Are you ready to play?
Sure.
The band is Ha 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 Ha. Again, it's Ha 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 Ha.
Like laughing?
No, the band's not called Like Laughing. The band is Ha 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 Ha.
How do you spell that?
H-A-H-A-H-A-H-A-H-A-H-A.
That sounds kind of weird, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does. Yes, it does seem kind of weird.
Band names are weird always.
Is that a band I was in or a Lollapalooza band?
Boy. I'll say no. I mean, that doesn't sound like something. That sounds like something you'd be in.
That's exactly right. Congratulations. We'll tell you what prize you've won in a second. Let me go to James. James, you understand how to play America's Slowest Growing Game Show, don't you?
I sure do, Steve.
The band is Hiatus Coyote. Hiatus Coyote.
I'm going to say that's a Lala band.
Look at this. These guys are off and running. James, you're a big winner. Let me go to Dave on this. Dave, are you ready to play?
I'm ready to play.
The band is Bro Safari. Bro Safari.
That's your band, Steve.
Oh, no, that's an actual Lollapalooza band. Would you like to play again since you didn't play well that time?
Sure.
Are you better at playing with others now? Are you ready to play?
I will do my best.
Ask for help if you're not sure. The band is Destructive Toddlers. Destructive Toddlers.
I think that's you again, Steve.
Oh, that's fantastic. You are a big winner. Let's go one more. It's Jim. You've been holding on. Jim, the band is the best band ever. The best band ever. Is that a Lollapalooza band, or is that a band that I was in?
That's a band you're in.
That's exactly right. Congratulations to all of our winners.
That was better.
Slick, huh?
Making progress. Yeah.
Maybe it is growing.
You know, the best band ever was not really a very good band, but the marquee always looked great. Playing tonight, the best band ever.
Were they as good as Ha Ha Ha?
No, Ha 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 was a great band.
Yeah,
we didn't get a lot of credit, though, because people kept going, how do you spell it? Winners include people getting tickets to an actual musical artist, Tom Jones, October 3rd at the House of Blues, and a certificate for the House of Blues restaurant and bar.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
So if you agree that there's too much inequality in our economy and too much money in our politics, we all need to be as vocal and as organized and as persistent as Bernie Sanders supporters have been during this election. We all need to get out and vote for Democrats up and down the ticket and then hold them accountable until they get the job done. That's right, feel the burn. And we're gonna let it burn.
Really smart moment by the president last night. Tip of the hat to the Bernie Sanders supporters. They were frankly kind of jerks a good portion of the night. Leon Panetta has done more for this country than probably the bulk of the room. And they were heckling his speech. I mean, come on, grow up. Oh, wait, Sarah Silverman said that? I'm sorry. at 7:13. Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, Channel 9, CLTV, birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, and Sunday mornings on the Sunday Spin. You're in studio this week, I assume?
Yes, I am. And looking forward to the show.
Who's your guest?
I have Michael Golden. He's an author and a reform-interested author for How to Change Congress. And I also have the University of Illinois' Christopher Mooney.
All right, so you have been knee-deep in this since last week. And the big news offstage last night was Trump's comments about Russia. And, hey, why don't you hack this DNC one more time and maybe throw Trump a bone? He can't be that stupid, can he?
Well, you know, after he made that comment in Florida, all Team Trump has done is try to backtrack. And first they said, well, if Russia's got the emails, they should turn them over to the FBI. And then it was, well, he was telling a joke. Well, it didn't come across as a joke. And, you know, here he is just days away from being poised to be given intelligence briefings as the Republican nominee. To talk about having a superpower like Russia that kept offering that kind of encouragement to use cyber attacks, you know, what does that say about his judgment? And again, this is kind of a repeated thing with Donald Trump.
Well, and it, for the vast middle conspiracy that will elect a president in a close race. I mean, this is what it's going to come down to. Are you ready to turn the keys over to Donald Trump?
Well, and I think truly that's always been the bottom line. And I'm not sure, you know, you've mentioned that before. I've mentioned that before. But I think that ultimately will be the kind of bring it home message for Democrats is, are you ready and willing to have this guy have the nuclear codes, given the intemperate remarks that he makes, the temperament issue? And, you know, that's ultimately what it comes down to. And, you know, here you have him talking about how national security is really kind of his major theme, but at the same time, this talk of him coddling Russia, even in the press conference yesterday, saying, you know, would he review giving Crimea over to Russia? And he said, yes, I'd definitely look at that. Those kinds of statements just...
It's just idiotic. You can spend 5 minutes on Google and not know who Crimea is and know that's a bad answer.
Right. And That's what exactly the point. I mean, it doesn't matter. It just, are you willing to turn that over to Russia? That says everything right there. Despite his complete denials that he has any involvement with Putin, he doesn't know Putin, and that he has no investments in Russia.
We've sort of developed this numbness to, oh, that's just Trump being Trump. This is serious business, kids, and you got to figure out. Love of country versus love of your feeling of being right for the sake of feeling right. It's just very scary. And by the way, if it was anybody other than Hillary Clinton, this wouldn't even be close.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. I mean, a new polling today shows that the likability factor of both Trump and Hillary Clinton is exactly the same. 58% unfavorability rating for each one of these candidates.
It's not a presidential race. It's a demolition derby. Our mutual friend Pat Brady's here. Say hi to Rick.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? Hey, bringing the Trump thing home a bit. We have seen some polls recently that shows that Senator Kirk has been able to separate himself from Trump, which to me seems to be the recipe for success for the disaster we have at the top of the ticket. Do you feel the same way, or are you getting any information on that?
You know, I still think it's too early. I think certainly, you know, you still have Kirk has some name recognition here. Tonight is Tammy Duckworth's big speech as well. But obviously the recipe that a lot of Republican senators, Republican congressmen are using throughout the country, and it doesn't even have to be in a red state, blue state kind of thing. It's just trying to keep that separation from Donald Trump. We saw it with Paul Ryan talking about how House Republicans under his speakership, they're going to have their own playbook. And that's what the House Republican agenda is in Congress. And that's regardless of Donald Trump.
Hey, you know, Chuck Todd made a point earlier about the president potentially throwing Republicans a bone, pointing when he pointed out that Trump is neither a conservative or a Republican. Why would he do that? Or, I mean, do you see that as helpful or just interesting?
No, I think it's one. It's part of a reach across the aisle kind of effort. I mean, one of the speakers tonight is a woman who's heading up ostensibly this Republicans for Hillary organization. I think you're going to see a lot more reaching across the aisle. And yeah, certainly Hillary Clinton's no conservative, but when you look at Donald Trump and you take these issues of, you know, a lack of ideology, concern about temperament, at least with Hillary, you know what you're getting.
It's Rick Pearson, Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com, and the Sunday Spin. What time are you on Sunday?
7 and 9, and we get your week started.
Yes, you do, with fine programming on Sunday morning. You get to, you hear Rick, you get your politics kicked off, and then you got Dean right after. You can get a little Chuck Todd if you like, and then you can go out and do the community service work that I do on the golf course.
we used to call that field research.
That's what it is, field research. I forgot the term. /7:23, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It's show number 701 at Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, and 312-981-7200. Pat Brady's here from, what is your company?
Next Generation Strategies.
And Next Generation Strategies, outside of doing children's birthday parties, does what?
Government affairs.
Okay, good. Before we get into the conversation of last night and where this campaign is, would you like to play a quick round of Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
Sure.
All right. I'll give you the name. You tell me if it's a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in. VHS collection.
That was Dave Ennett's band.
Yes, it was.
That's exactly right. That is not a band I was in. Box of Despair.
Lolla.
No, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. Apparently, politics is your game. Box of Despair is a band I was in.
No, I just pay for my kids' Lolla tickets, which are about half their college tuition.
They're a tad expensive,
aren't
they?
Oh, my gosh, they are. Yes.
And did you say I could just drop you off in a bad neighborhood somewhere and it would be free?
I just sold one of my kids to pay for the other kids' tickets. I mean, they are very expensive.
You paid for all of them?
You know,
you
know what we need to talk to at some point? We need to talk to the people whose job it is, because there's somebody that does this for the city. Once Lollapalooza is set up, they go around and they try to find where the beer is buried. And I'm not exaggerating.
Right.
Because a week ahead of time, kids at night go in and they bury booze in Grant Park in certain areas. And then they try to get in and get to those spots and dig up their booze.
That's ingenious.
You know, remember when the president's daughter was there a couple years ago?
Uh-huh.
There was a picture. Well, in the corner of that picture was my oldest daughter holding something in her hand that looked like a drink, too. So, very proud moment.
All right, 7:25, we continue. One bone to pick with last night's festivities, and I certainly understand why they say it, but to say Hillary Clinton is the most qualified candidate of all time is unfair to George H.W. Bush. The first President Bush, I would argue, is just, if not more, qualified, considering all the things he accomplished in his life.
Sure, CIA, Congress, and more important to me is he actually started and successfully built a business.
Yeah, and a war hero.
And a war hero.
And a two-time vice president.
And I think he was the youngest naval pilot in World War II.
So,
but Eric's going to walk in and disagree with me right
each
now.
Each party gets one. Each party. And good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome back from Philadelphia.
Thanks.
So I don't want to leave this Trump thing, because it really can't be left. Jake, if you would play what Trump said yesterday again, because it's really important.
I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. I don't think Putin has any respect whatsoever for Clinton. I think he does respect me. And I hope I get along great with him. It's possible that we won't, Jeremy. I hope that we get along great with Putin, because it would be great to have Russia with a good relationship. Right now, we don't have a good relationship. Putin has said things over the last year that are really bad things, okay? He mentioned the N-word one time. I was shocked to hear him mention the N-word. You know what the N-word is, right? He mentioned it. I was shocked. He has a total lack of respect for President Obama. Number one, he doesn't like him. And number two, he doesn't respect him. I think he's going to respect your president if I'm elected. And I hope he likes me. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
It's not a joke. It's not sarcastic. It's not something that was a slip of the tongue. He said it because he thought it was the right thing to say at the time. Open mouth, stick foot in. It's way more serious than that. You can't have someone who's got a 50-50 shot at being president of the United States inviting another nation to hack the United States and another party. By the way, the essential premise of Watergate. It's just outrageous. And, you know, I'm saying this rises to a level of criminality because there are other things we need to get accomplished.
We could argue it's treason.
Yeah, but you've got to stop down for a second if you're wavering and you're thinking maybe Trump's your guy to say you're about to turn it over to that guy. And that guy thought that statement was okay. I don't get it. I don't get how anybody can have Trump on their radar. And I don't assume that you two are going to argue with me, but fact of the matter is...
Eric's just smiling.
Yeah, I'm not smiling. It's frightening.
It is frightening because he thought it was okay to say it. You know that chip in your brain that causes you not to curse in church? You got to have that chip in your brain when you're running for president of the United States to go, what? I'm not saying that. Are you kidding me?
Well, the thing that concerns me is we've gotten to a place where, you know, it's the normalization of the extreme. And I don't mean ideology extreme. I mean the extremely outrageous things that we would never tolerate. But in a sense, the calluses have grown, I don't know, because of this guy or our politics or whatever, that somehow it becomes normalized. Statements that in the past would be treasonous.
I thought last night, though, when Bloomberg raised the sanity question.
Yeah.
But I can't disagree. If you listen to that 30 seconds of recording there, where is this guy coming from? That is an odd transcript.
Yeah, we're way beyond the primary. We're into the general election. We're now beyond the conventions within a few hours. And there's nothing to believe that this guy's behavior is going to change in any way. And every day he gets one step closer to having the most important and most powerful job in the universe. And he thinks it's okay to say that?
There's a very effective YouTube commercial out right now going through history of the recent presidents, all of laying out statements questioning his ability to be commander-in-chief. And it's a lot of Republicans and some very powerful statements about Trump. I thought it's the best ad I've seen so far.
That's the other thing that everybody, I think, really needs to focus on and remember. When you take the oath of office, your primary job, you come to work every day and you see the security briefings that will scare the living daylights out of
you. He's going to start getting security briefings shortly.
I don't think he should. I think maybe we should give him a comic book, maybe some crayons.
He doesn't read, does he?
He has others do it for him. Yes. But the fact is, you can't have someone in charge who doesn't understand the gravity of what it means to protect this country.
Well, he did the same thing when you talk about the position of president. He did the same thing attacking the judiciary when he went after the judge in California. He doesn't understand the fundamental role of being president of the United States. And you've said all along, I'm not sure if he really wants it. But this stuff yesterday, to me, is very scary.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern, that he's not calculated. He's not strategic. He's not smart. That's the problem.
I agree that you don't have to be smart to be wealthy, or at least put the appearance of being wealthy.
It's 7:29. Can you play for me, though, just so people understand and they don't think it's just more Steve bashing Trump? You know, Trump's all over this morning. Trump's people all over the morning. He's kidding.
Hey, what
Donnie's
country are we
kidding.
Going to win if he wins? Because you and I are going to be.
Oh, we're out. Yeah, we're absolutely out. He's kidding. This is, again, Trump in Trump's words yesterday. Sound like a joke to you?
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
It's just...
Well, and then he tweeted it out later. So the idea that it was an offhanded joke, he then tweeted it out and said, hey, Russia, if you're listening, go find the emails.
7:30. Big story next. Back to Andrea from Philly, too, on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Trump is a guy who promises a lot, but you might have noticed he's got a way of saying the same two words every time he makes his biggest, hugest promises.
Believe me.
Believe me.
It's going to be great. Believe me.
Believe me.
We're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Believe me.
Believe me. Believe me.
We're going to destroy ISIS so fast, believe me.
That will end, and it'll end soon, believe me.
There's nothing suspicious in my tax returns, believe me.
I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
Don't stop believing. Hold on to that faith. Don't stop believing.
Nice job, Mike Jacobson, as always, 741. Pat Brady's here. Eric Edelstein's here. Eric, your company is what?
Media.
Say it again for me.
AL Media.
And you're just back from Philadelphia.
I am.
Are those conventions, and Pat, you were in Cleveland, are those conventions fun?
They're fun slash work. What they really are is exercises in sleep deprivation, because there's morning meetings for every delegation, and usually you're at a delegation hotel and have stuff to do. Those breakfasts start at 7. The actual convention goes from, you know, say 4 o'clock till midnight, and then the parties are going on. And the parties aren't just, oh, let's go have a good time. You kind of got to do FaceTime. You got to go around to a couple. So by the time you get back to your room, it's 2, 3 a.m.,
and then it starts all over.
And then it starts again. So it's a grind, but it's a little bit. It's a sort of a combination of a Las Vegas weekend and a college reunion, if you can imagine that.
Well, because every politician has an agenda, the same way everybody in Hollywood has an agenda.
I would
assume everybody's amped up to see the person they need to see, to barge their way in as a speaker that they want to speak at something they weren't invited to speak at. Those type of things.
Yes, my favorite just sort of crotchety moment. I happened to be standing in a hotel lobby with Governor Brown from California, and he's with his advance guy, and the advance guy goes, oh, well, Governor, we can go up to the 5th floor where there are seats. And he just laid into him with F-bombs. He goes, why the F would I want to go up there? We're going to sit right here. It was
really?
like the cranky man.
Wow.
He must have not had his coffee or something.
Oh, well, that's what you said, lack of sleep.
Governor Moonbeam.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, same experience in Cleveland.
I managed to have a pretty good time.
You did.
So, believe it or not. But it is, you need some sleep when you get home.
It's 7:43. We're talking about what's going on with the DNC this week. Based on pure appearance and how it's showing on television, there really isn't much of a comparison. The speakers have been better at the DNC. The message has been more disciplined. And I think if you sat down at the beginning of the week and saw what happened with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Frusenglush, and Farfignugan, you got to be very pleased with how it's turned out 2 days later.
Yeah, I don't think it's could have gone any better. I mean, after that first hour when every time Hillary's name was mentioned, it was booed, I think there was a bit of a, you know, agita going on in the Democratic Party. But I think it's gone off brilliantly. You know, I think one of the things last night, just, to, you know, a lot of this has to do with the scheduling and sort of how you come at things. I thought something that was brilliant, not many people I've seen talk about it, is kind of the pincer maneuver by having Bloomberg and Biden go after Trump back to back.
In reaction.
Well, because you sort of had middle class Joe.
Right.
And the billionaire guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you sort of got him from both sides. And, you know, I thought it was really powerful, and then obviously followed up with the cleanup hitter in the president, really, really laying it on.
I thought Biden was great too.
Those were the best three, other than Michelle Obama's speech. Yeah. But on the substance of attacking Trump, it was pretty good.
Yeah, middle class Joe, as you said, expressing that viewpoint and doing a nice little subtle tie-in that's not a compliment in Washington to identify himself with regular folks. I mean, it's a big deal, but. Let's juxtapose that against what happened yesterday, where Donald Trump showed up in Scranton to a huge crowd and roaring people. You know, you guys have both been saying this is going to be close. There's no reason to think it's not going to be close after these 2 weeks.
Right. It'll be close. But, you know, close is a relative term. We'll see kind of where it settles in by August 15th. I think if I were speculating, I think she ends up being a, you know, 60-40, 70-30 favorite. And I don't mean the vote would be that. I just mean in terms of the odds of winning this thing. We'll see how that settles. And, you know, one thing I want to just say, Steve, about what the president did, it was almost Reagan-esque. What Reagan was would always able to do is he'd set up a binary choice. You were either, you know, for the Contras or you were anti-American. You were for, you know, Star Wars or you were for nuclear war. Mm-hmm. And Obama did that, I thought, brilliantly on you're either American or you're for Trump, in the sense that you're, you know, we defeat homegrown demagogues.
Right,
that's
right,
what
right.
Americans do.
Wait, juxtaposition there is that is typically the Republican playbook to
exactly.
Wave the flag, and this guy has been such Trump been such a disaster in the negativity of his speech, it allowed the Democrats to steal that our playbook.
But that's a great point that you made earlier, Pat, because I think one of the great mistakes that President Obama will lament in his the years down the road is I was too much of a Democrat and not the president of the United States enough of the time. And last night he did things you don't normally see. He was self-deprecating. He said, look, I'd love to have more time. I'd love to get more things done. We didn't get everything done. I think people need to hear that. He was good at lauding, you know, what did get done. But I thought he poked fun at himself a little bit while he recognized everything else. And the point you made earlier, he reached out to Republicans and said last week wasn't conservative and it wasn't Republican.
Right. And
that, I mean, that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And like Pat said, stealing their play out of the Republican playbook is saying, how dare you talk down our military, our country? Yeah, we got challenges. Yeah, everything's not going great. But this is the greatest country on earth. And
right.
And you people are, in a sense, are un-American, unpatriotic.
Go back to 1980. Now the Republicans are Jimmy Carter and the Democrats are Ronald Reagan, that shining city on the hill.
Well, it took us a while to learn the lessons. But
well, a couple things. Republicans need to wake up, unless you want to hand the keys to the kingdom to the Clintons and get through what Hillary might want to get through. We need to concentrate on trying to keep the Senate and keeping our majorities in the House, which I think we're seeing a lot of focus on that. But it's I'm not as optimistic.
What did you think of Kane last night, Pat?
He was boring, but he was better when he got his Steve, you're a comedian. Don't do comedy unless you can.
Yeah, politicians should never do comedy.
Well, his emphasis on the me was wrong. You swallow the me. I think it's, you know, it's, I can't.
Believe
really
me.
Believe me.
Believe me.
Believe me. He was like, believe me. Believe me.
The me is not the up. The me is the down.
Somebody wrote,
believe me.
Somebody wrote, he's like the, I thought this was sweet. He's like the goofy high school teacher who tells the bad jokes and everyone laughs at him, but he's the guy who you went to college because of him and you never forget him.
We have a storm clouds on the horizon here for the Democrat Love Fest. Is the worst speaker of all of them is up tonight, and that's Madam Secretary.
There's a rule in show business, and let's not kid ourselves, this is show business. There's a rule in show business that the closer should never be weaker than the opening acts. It's a tough opening act lineup to follow, man.
But it's also
three nights of this
when expectations are lower. And, you know, you can outperform. Look,
that's what Chuck Todd did. Chuck Todd said, look, we don't expect much out of Hillary.
I just don't want to get yelled at again. After Elizabeth Warren, you know, free market capitalists, we're all bad. And we got yelled at for about 15 minutes.
I anticipate. Well, let's save this. We'll come back after traffic. You guys can tell me what you expect Hillary will say tonight and what she won't say.
I think Donald Trump has said he's qualified to be president because of his business record. A few days ago, he said, and I quote, I'm going to do for the country what I did for my business. So let's take a look at what he did for his business. He's written a lot of books about business. They all seem to end at chapter 11.
Hey, hey! Don't be funny. Don't be funny. That's all. It's a simple rule. Don't be funny. $750, $300 live in Philadelphia. Do you get to eat at the Illinois breakfast this morning?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I usually don't. I'll just have a cup of coffee. But they have a pretty nice spread. They have a little omelet station here and some breakfast sandwiches and some fruit. Mayor Emanuel, which, by the way, just ate the fruit.
I don't know. Is that code for something or did he actually have fruit?
You know, as soon as I said it, I had a feeling you were going to say that. But no, he just ate the fruit. He came in. He was with Senator Dick Durbin. They're both speaking this morning at the Illinois delegation breakfast, kind of riling up the troops here on the last day of the convention, last formal day, really. I know it ends Friday, but tonight it culminates with Hillary Clinton's speech. But I actually had a chance, Steve, to talk with Mayor Emanuel just before he went into the room, and he just was blown away by President Obama and Michelle Obama. This is what he had to say.
I want to say both President Obama and Michelle Obama, I think, were unbelievable speakers because both talked about, first, the promise of America and what it means, and the American dream and what it means in all its translations has a single value system for all of us. I firmly believe that this convention is about hope, where Cleveland, the Republican convention, was about fair. This convention is about, the Democratic convention is about unity, whether you're a Democrat, independent, or Republican. Where the convention in Cleveland offered nothing but division. I think this the Democratic Party and its convention had an optimism to it, where the Republican convention had a pessimism about America's future. And each speaker not only spoke about what America could do, but what Secretary Clinton can do to build that and build on the American promise that all of us share together. And I think fundamentally, there's a clear contrast. And I think as recently as yesterday, Donald Trump's actions and statements show who's ready to be president, who's ready to build that future, and who would put that future of America's promise and what we think for our children at risk.
Yeah, and Mayor Emanuel, they're alluding, Steve, to the Donald Trump and the email. I guess this is the new email scandal. Is that what we're calling it with Russia?
Email 2, the next adventure?
Exactly, yeah. Email too. But yeah, so he's echoing that right now. He's actually speaking right now. And then Tony Preckwinkle
is going to talk, and Dick Durbin as well. Again, just kind of like rallying everybody for tonight's speech. And that's kind of the common theme that I've seen so far. Of course, you have to realize, you know, considering the source here, but that this has just been a very positive, you know, last night's same message of love and peace.
So has Mike Madigan come by? Has Mike Madigan come by and is he demanding that you put him on the air with me?
No, he's not yet, strangely. But you know what? I bet he's waiting for the end of the breakfast.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That's all I can think of.
Well, we'll stand by for your next report. That's Andrea live in Philadelphia. Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are here in studio. So what's Hillary going to say tonight? Either one of you.
Well, what's she going to say, or what would I like to see her say?
Both.
Well, you know, I think she'll do some storytelling. I think she'll talk about her.
She's going to start it off with, in 1971,
no,
I met a boy.
In August at 4 o'clock on 1977. No, I think she will.
How many times has Bill Clinton said, I met a girl?
Nice. I think it will be a hopeful vision. I think there will be a Trump takedown, and I think it will be aspirational. What I would love to see her do, I've talked about this on this show, in her autobiography, there's a story that I think, particularly for female candidates, I think it's important to go to motivation. What makes you do what you do? And there's a story from her autobiography when she wrote to NASA as a little girl in the middle of the space race wanting to be an astronaut, and NASA wrote back and said, girls can't be astronauts. And to say, you know, my parents had told me I could be anything I wanted to be, and then the world said, not so fast, girl. To be the first female nominee of a major party in this country to say that's the greatness of America, that, you know, a little
girl. And
that's
a great why I'm standing here story.
Exactly. And it goes to motivation. Yeah, and I think it strips away a lot of the, oh, you know, I'm going to put all these motives on her. So, look, it may not be that story. It may be something else. But I think it would be powerful to kind of hear those formative things from her tonight.
Let me switch it for you, Pat. What do you expect her to say, and what's the worst thing she could say in regards to the Republican side of the race?
And so far as Trump?
Well, just as far as you go, uh-oh, that's not good. That took her a leg up even farther.
I don't necessarily agree. She has so much history, even that cute NASA story. We've been watching Hillary Clinton for 30 years. I think what she won't talk about is her husband, the North American Free Trade Agreement or impeachment or Hillary Care or some of the abysmal failures she's had. Listen, they said last night she's the most qualified person to run for the presidency, which I don't agree. And experience doesn't necessarily equate with good experience. The Cubs have had managers until recently for 70 years. So we know just being there doesn't mean you are good
at
it.
That's a fair point, actually. Yeah. All right, so it wraps
Did
tonight.
Did you just call me a cynic? Oh, my God.
Cynical.
I'm sorry.
Pat doesn't like the story. I don't know. It's great to see you guys. Congratulations on surviving 2 weeks on the battlefield and taking one for the team. AL Media for Eric Edelstein, Next Generation Strategies for Pat Brady. Both are available for your birthday party or bar mitzvah.
Or bris.
Or bro. Well, not Pat. It's a couple of minutes before 8. We'll come back, get the news in a moment on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, 8-11, let me tell you why you get into show business. You get into show business for chicks, liquor, the ability to get a nice table at a restaurant on no notice on a Saturday night, and the day you stand around in the heat at Lollapalooza with all the kids. That's why you get into show business. Dean Richards is live at Lollapalooza.
I've already lost 15 pounds, and I've only been here an hour.
Where are you stationed right now? Are you in the you in with the kids? You talking to the kids?
Well, I'm not talking to the kids yet. I'll talk to the kids in a little while. I've done this, you know, a pretty long time, so I don't go out into the masses any sooner than I need to.
Sure.
Really. Although, we're stationed at Congress and Michigan Avenue. We're at the Congress Plaza Hotel, kind of stationed above where everyone goes in. So we actually have a fantastic point of view to see, you know, what's going on with the crowds, what's going on with security, which is a huge concern this year. But interestingly, I got here this morning just a little after 6 o'clock. People are already lined up at the entrance gates to get in. The gates open at 11 o'clock. So many people will have, you know, sat in line for 5 hours before they even get in. There's probably like 50 people, I'll bet, you know, waiting to get in right now just to see, you know, some of the 11 o'clock bands that are playing out here.
I won't stand in line for 50 minutes for anything, and they're in line already.
I know. Right. Well, that's because I'm with you on that. But that's because we're cranky old men. And, you know, we, you know what, even if Connie Francis was performing, Steve, and, you know, does it get any bigger than that, honestly?
By the way, I'm glad you brought that up. Cranky old men. Is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
That is a band. That's a band you were in, and I think a movie that you were in, too, wasn't it?
It is a band I was in. The movie was actually called Grumpy Old Men.
Yeah, same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah. We'll play the slowest growing game show in America called Lollapalooza Band or a Band I Was In with Dean in the second segment. So if you want to win prizes, you can call and stand by at 312-981-7200. And if Dean answers correctly, you'll win. If Dean is incorrect, then you have to send Dean something from your house. Okay,
so that would be fantastic. I would like that. I'd like that. 170 bands. Lollapalooza starting a day earlier than usual this year. It's 4 days.
That's great because Perry Farrell needs the money.
Perry Farrell apparently was, I'm told, well, he was at the Metro. He and his band, Jane's Addiction, were playing at the Metro on Clark Street last night. They're going to play again tonight. I'm told that Perry Farrell, who's like our age, on stage chugging beverages. I don't really know what was in the bottle, but chugging beverages. And above him, I am told from a fan who was there, women hanging on hooks as though they were sides of beef. That's what I'm told. That's all I know. A very reliable source told me. That's what Perry Farrell did at Lollapalooza, the Metro.
Anytime you see stuff like that in show business, to me, it's more entertaining to stop and go, what kind of meeting did they have where they talked this one over? All right, so here's what we're going to need. We're going to need hooks and humans.
Again, cranky old man. What kind of flippledy jibbledy? You call this music with your rock and roll and hanging women on hooks back in my day.
How about Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats?
You're asking me? That is a Lollapalooza band.
That is a Lollapalooza band. You're exactly right. How about the Pokey Monsters?
Is a band you were in.
Oh, you're very good at this. Dean is very good at this. So, again, if you call at 312-981-7200, you could be able to win, if Dean is correct, when we play Lollapalooza Band or a band I was in. Dean will tell you about some of the fabulous entertainment as well, separate from our slowest rising game show. When we come back, he is live at Lollapalooza. And the thing about Channel 9, you guys, Channel 9 now has newscasts every 10 minutes all day long.
They do, yeah.
So Dean is just positioned out there all day long reporting on the newscast. And each newscast, they have a bet in the control room on whether or not he can come up with a new angle.
Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
We go back to Dean live at Lollapalooza to play America's fastest growing game show. I've changed it. It's time again for Lollapalooza Band or a Band I Was In. Excited? Are you excited?
I cannot even tell you how excited I am.
Let's go to Larry. Oh, Larry. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good. Hey, can I say hello to Dean? We sort of know each other from the past.
No, I'm sorry. They can't do that. Yeah, of course you can.
In what way do we know each other from the past, Larry?
From Cole's school. I was with you at Principal for a Day in 2009.
Oh, my gosh. This, Steve, this is the grade school that I went to.
That's very nice.
On the southeast side of Chicago, Edward Cole School. You know how they do that Principal for a Day thing once a year?
Yeah, I do. Now, even though I've never been asked to do it, and again, I want to tell the city the same thing I tell other people. You should invite me. I won't show up.
I would like you to come, like, if I've been principal for a day at my grade school, mm-hmm. I'd like to go back and be principal for a day at my high school now and invite you to come with me. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
I would be. I'd be your bouncer.
That's right. That's right. And so I went back to my grade school. and Larry and a bunch of the guys that I went to grade school with, they're probably, what, Larry, like 10, 12, 20 of us, something like
that. Yeah.
A whole bunch.
It was great. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
The thing I noticed the most about Cole School was, did you notice the dust on the pictures in the hallway? It was the same from 1967.
Yeah, they still haven't cleaned the dust off the pictures in the wall.
Well, listen, you two get some lunch. In the meantime, the band is Tilted MILF. Tilted MILF. Is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
Well, since I'm a music guy from the 60s, I'm going to say that's a Lollapalooza band.
Dean, your thoughts?
I'm going to say a band you were in.
If either one of those is correct, you're a winner. That's right. It's a band I was in. Hold on, Larry. You're a big, big winner. Let's see who else
Larry,
went.
You still owe me a quarter, Larry.
Brian, how do you know Dean? Brian, are you with me?
I am here. I don't know Dean.
All right, here's your band. Crotchless right. Dress Pants. Crotchless Dress Pants. Is that a band I was in or a Lollapalooza band?
I'm going with Lollapalooza band.
And Dean?
And once again, I'm going to go with band you were in.
That's exactly right, Dean. It's a band I was in. And since you're playing with your new friend, Brian, he's a big winner as well. Let's go to Josh. Just like how I make the rules up as I go along.
Those are the best
Absolutely.
Games.
Absolutely.
Hey, Josh, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. The band is Marshmallow. Marshmallow. Dean, Lollapalooza band or band I was in?
Band you were in.
All right, how about you? Is it still Josh? Yes, Josh?
I'm going to go with Lollapalooza band, actually.
It's a Lollapalooza band. Dean's wrong, you're right, you win.
All right.
You know how much this would cost Hollywood if they ran game shows like this, where no matter whether you're right or wrong, you still win?
That's right. This is a lovely, lovely kind of contest.
You get like one letter in the car, and you get the car anyway. Let's go to Maria. Maria, were you ever married to Dean?
No.
Well, you don't have to be so excited about it.
You don't have to sound so happy about it, right?
All right, Maria. The band is Mom Likes Me Best. Mom Likes Me Best. Is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
That is not a band of Lollapalooza.
That's a band I was in. Dean, agree or disagree?
I agree with my wife.
Oh, you're a big winner, Maria. That's fantastic. Let's go to one more. We're out of prizes. I'm now taking money out of my wallet. Here's is it Lorraine?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you having a nice day?
So far, yes, and since I'm talking to you, I listen to you every day, and I try to get through, and it's too busy all the time, but today I got it.
Frickin' other people. Ridiculous. Dean, say hi to our friend Lorraine.
Lorraine, how are you, my dear?
I'm good. I love you.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Love you.
Okay.
Wait till your other wife finds out about it.
This was a big Dean love fest today.
All right, the band is Frightened Rabbit. Frightened Rabbit. Is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
I'll say Lollapalooza.
How about you, Dean?
I'm with her.
That's correct. That's unbelievable. Lorraine, since you're my favorite, you win everything we have left. Which appears to be a dust bunny and a $2 bill. But hold on, we'll tell you which prizes are out there. And Dean, what else can you tell us about Lollapalooza?
I can tell you things that you cannot bring in if you or maybe your kids are coming into Lollapalooza today. You cannot bring tripods, selfie sticks. You cannot bring any aerosol containers. You cannot bring professional recording equipment. A lot of people do that. Coolers. They will not let you bring in food or beverage or skateboards. Steve is on a skateboard all the time. You're going to have to leave that at the station. Tents, canopies. You can't bring in something to promote a business. They won't let you do any of that. There is unprecedented security, more than I've ever seen at Lollapalooza. And usually it's just because of fence jumpers and, you know, things like that. But this year, obviously, because of all the very serious stories around the world at large events like this, the City of Chicago and Office of Emergency Management have both unprecedented numbers of uniformed and plainclothes policemen all over the place keeping an eye on everything to keep everybody safe. They're not expecting any severe weather this weekend, but it has happened in the past where they've actually evacuated Lollapalooza because of bad weather. If anything like that should happen, they tell people to go to the underground garages, the Grant Park garages, the Millennium Park garages, get to the underground garages if something should happen like that. Other than that, you know, tons of great music, tons of fun. You know, if you see me out there, you know, say hello. I'm in my official Lollapalooza clothes today. I'm super casual, and I'm guessing by about 12 o'clock I'll be so sweaty, a disgusting mess that you'll want to actually try to avoid me if possible.
But I do want to say, and Dean won't say this, but you guys know it's true, when Dean's out in public, he loves to be touched by strangers.
Oh, yeah, that's his favorite.
His favorite
thing. I love to be hugged by strangers when it's super sweaty like this.
Yep, and that's something you can go and tell your friends. I'm not going to wash this off for a week, nor could I because it's Dean.
I don't think you'd be able to get it off you for a week. You'll have to get some turpentine to get it off.
Tomorrow you'll do the movie reviews?
Tomorrow I will review the new Jason Bourne movie and also this R-rated comedy, Bad Moms, with Mila Kunis.
All right, stand by for that tomorrow. Enjoy yourself out there. Know that there's a Channel 9 newscast every 10 minutes, and Dean has to come up with another new angle every 8. So stand by for that. And watch Dean sweat live at Lollapalooza. It's not an easy gig.
No. Not easy. No, it's a real tough gig. And you really were in crotchless dress pants?
No, it's the name of the band, Crotchless Dress Pants.
I know. That's what I mean.
Oh, I thought you said, am I wearing them? You said, was I in?
Were you
in? When I was in the band, yes. We wore crotchless dress pants.
No, I got it.
Yes,
okay.
That's exactly right. That was our hook. Prizes include, for the listeners, prizes include foursomes of free golf and cart fees of Billy Casper Golf. Play in the 6th annual World's Largest Golf Outing, Monday, August 1st. BillyCasperGolf.com benefits veterans and their families, and specifically the Fisher House. Free oil changes at Cassidy Tire and Service Centers, family owned and operated since 1914. CassidyTire.com. My pillows while they last, and oh, they're popular. That's MyPillow.com. And I know on this list it says, stop giving these away. We only have one. I'll get more. It's Apt gift cards, ABT Electronics, from our friends at Apt, Steve Shapiro, everybody out there at Apt, at apt.com. All right, it is 8:29. Let's take a break, come back, get your big story next. And Andre is live in Philly on 720 WGN.
Ryan Dempster.
There's a 1-1 to Freeman. Oh, he caught it right into the palm of Dempster's glove. Ooh, that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go, Cubs!
That was outstanding.
Crosstown Classic wraps up. Cubs finally got it going a little bit last night. After the first half of the game looked ugly, what'd they get, 8 in the last 4 innings?
They had 8 in the last 3 innings.
3 innings.
6th, 7th, and 8th.
And Ryan Dempster joins us. That's what Cub fans have come to expect this year. Do you expect it'll keep going today against Chris Sale?
Well, a tough task. You got a guy going out there today who's a little bit angry. He hasn't started in a while. So you better just be ready from the get-go because he's going to bring his A game. But you know, it was a big night last night to go out there and put up a bunch of runs, especially struggled to score on the south side and then kind of busted the game wide open there. So, you know, they got their hands full tonight. I know that.
So you ever shred your team's uniforms? You ever take the laundry, cut it up?
No. No, I can't say I ever went that far. I've gone with a lot of pranks in my day. I have frozen a pair of shoes. I've done a few things, but I've never gone that far.
I don't look. He's a phenomenal talent. There's nobody that could argue that. I just don't understand what that accomplished, and that, frankly, I don't understand not showing a little more remorse for it. Because if I'm his teammate, this might sound nutty, but in my world, you created a trust issue with me.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think. And listen, I'm not Chris. I mean, I'm purely speculating, and I don't know. I don't know any insider info.
But I do think that he probably thought, sometimes when we're players, we play a game of poker with the coaches or the front office where we want to posture and shake our tail feathers up and let us see who's the boss and in charge. And he thought maybe if he cut up the uniforms that they would actually wear the uniforms he wanted to wear and they could go out there and play. But it didn't turn out that way. And instead he had to go home and then be suspended. And, it's something I'm sure he wants to just put behind him and move forward. But I thought it was kind of ironic or funny after that. I feel like they wore those 83 throwback jerseys for like five games in a row. So
it works.
But here's kind of a way of saying, hey, we're not going to wear those. Fine, we'll wear these and we're going to wear them for a month.
But here's the thing, Dempster, from the time you came to the show and the time you left and certainly now, year in, year out, more and more is done to make a player completely comfortable. Am I nuts? I brought this up the other day. You don't have to answer the am I nuts question. But when Chris Sale says these unis are uncomfortable for me, don't they find the finest seamstress at all of Chicago to say, what do you need and how fast can we get it done? Yeah, we got to wear them, but I want them to fit you the way they need to fit you.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And the bottom line is listen, man, but the team puts that jersey out and that's the uniform we got to wear. And does it feel uncomfortable? It's untucked, the collars are too big, all that stuff. Listen, we're employed by whatever team we're employed by as players. And when they say to do something, we should do it. That's our boss.
It's business.
Yeah. We get spoiled as athletes. Everything's catered to us. And, the temperature needs to be the perfect, for me in order to go out there and pitch or play defense or whatever it is. Everything's catered towards the players. So sometimes we just need to take a step back and listen, he knows he messed up doing that. He's not silly. He stands by his word of feeling to him, it's the most important thing is winning. So if that means not putting a uniform on that's uncomfortable, then that's what he wants to do. And I get that. And I respect that he wants to do so much for his ball club and go out there and win a championship for the White Sox. But at the end of the day, somebody signs our check and pays our salary for us to go out there and not just do what we do on the field. That's the misconception. Everyone says, well, I perform on the field. I do what I need on the field. Hey, listen, you represent the organization. You do things on and off the field, and you're required to set a certain standard. He didn't meet that standard, and they suspend him for it. Now it's passed, and unfortunately for us, he's got to pitch tonight. He couldn't have waited one more day, but that's just the way it is.
Well, last night we got to see Aroldis Chapman, and I don't know if you heard this, Ryan. This was Jason Hammel, the winning pitcher, after the game. Here's what he said about what he saw from Chapman last night.
I'm not impressed. I thought we were getting the guy that threw 105. he only hit 103, so. Maybe, yeah. Not enough adrenaline.
So there you go. Not enough adrenaline. Not a save situation for him. Well, obviously, very, very tongue in cheek there. But
no, 103 was his changeup.
Yeah, that's it.
The reports had him a lot higher. I think the Yankees pulled one over on us because they had him at 105.
That's it. When you, there's a guy like that, a power arm. I mean, and not just. I think he's kind of at a different level. Now you had some guys when you were starting. You closed games, but when you were starting for the Cubs, you had a couple of guys out there in the bullpen, and Woody in particular had some big years closing games. What does it do for the starting pitcher knowing that in that ninth inning that game's going to be turned over to a guy like that?
No, listen, when you have a guy that – and anybody can blow any save on any time. The best closers in baseball do it. It happens. Guys are professional hitters. They can run into a fastball. But when you have a guy that's dominant, and now it pushes, Rondon into the eighth and Strope into the seventh, and it just is a domino effect and just makes the bullpen stronger and stronger. It makes you feel good, and that leaving a game that you got as good a chance as anybody to get that W. And that does a lot. It does a lot for that locker room to know you're not going to have to face them in a big game down the stretch, and you have them there. We've never seen anything like this. No one. This is what he's doing out there is abnormal. We can sit there and say a guy like him, there isn't a guy like him ever. I think the only guy maybe we could talk about that's kind of like him is Steve Delkowski. And for those people who don't know him, he was a minor leaguer for the Baltimore Orioles back in, I think, the 60s that threw, 105 miles an hour, but he couldn't throw strikes. He'd, walk the yard or strike out 16 and walk 12. But this guy can throw strikes, and he's got a good breaking ball.
and he loves it. He loves the adrenaline of pitching the ninth inning, but that's a whole different level. To be able to turn it up that hard and throw that hard on a consistent basis is it's a lot of fun. And you saw the electricity in the stadium last night and how awesome that is, and glad that he's in a Cubs uniform helping us win ball games.
Well, I always thought 100 miles an hour was like the four-minute mile. You know, it was one of those barriers that when you broke it, it was a huge deal, and very few people would better it by much. Does 105 now, even though it seems like it's once in a generation, mean that somebody out there, you know, down the road is going to throw 110? I mean, at some point, there's human limits.
Yeah, for sure, there is. I mean, you got to wonder, is that pretty much capped at what it's going to be or what we'll see in our lifetime? I don't see anybody. I mean, there's nobody that throws really 102. So when you're talking like miles an hour at that level to get, you know, that much extra velocity of 5 miles an hour more than 100, you know, you talk about little tiny gains. Oh, it takes so much to throw 1 mile an hour more for him to be able to throw that much harder than a lot of people. I mean, you look at him genetically, he's just gifted. He's big, tall, strong legs, good mechanics. He gets downhill, down on his front side. He's not just out there Mitch Wild Thing Williams falling off the mound. He's got good mechanics. He's tight. He knows what he's doing, and he's generating, you know, huge amounts of power and just absolutely throwing tic-tacs. They look like little white tic-tacs flying through the home plate. It's tough to square that up. Guys are going to run into it. They're going to swing. Sometimes you see guys, they're just swinging as soon as he's letting go of the ball and hope that he throws the ball where their bat is going through the zone, because that's really their only chance to get a hit off.
You know, we were doing some promotion 10 years ago or so, and Pinella was there, and they had the gun out, and every guy listening knows what I'm talking about. If you've ever tried to throw on a gun, you know, when you were 25, maybe you hit 75 or 80, and you thought, wow, this is really good. Well, when you're 45, which I was at the time, I thought, well, I got a 75 in me. And I threw really what I thought was as hard as I could throw, 59 miles an hour. And Lou Piniella looked at me and he said, we might be able to use you because that's so far below hitting speed, nobody could touch it.
That's right. Always there's two variables. You got above the hitting speed and below the hitting speed. And like Jamie Moyer won 260 games in the big leagues. And there's a pretty good chance that the catcher catching him could have used no glove and just caught a barehanded.
Ryan Burrow, last question
kind of a barstool conversation question. I was talking to a buddy about this. Okay, in the Crosstown Classic games, I assume players can sleep in their own beds at night, but how do you guys travel to the opposition ballpark? Do the Cubs meet at Wrigley and then head down to the cell together? Does everyone just kind of Uber and divvy it to the park? How does that work?
A little bit of both. You all have a team bus that goes down there, one or two of them, usually just one. You'll have guys who are drive, carpool down. We actually had an interesting time when Ted Lilly and I played. We would ride our bikes down along the lake and then get off and cruise across on 35th down to the ballpark.
And, okay, I hope Jake Arrieta is not listening to this right now. Do not do that, Jake Arrieta, unless you're wearing a helmet and
awesome,
like body armor.
It was the way to travel. It really was, because you didn't have to sit in traffic. You got a really good leg workout in. And at my highlight at one day, Coy Hill actually was our catcher. He said, hey, do you guys mind if I ride down with you tomorrow? And we said, no problem. We're leaving at this time. We show up to the ballpark, and Coy showed up in neon green spandex. And a full-on Tour de France biking helmet, glasses, you name it. It was the most incredible outfit. He rocked that all the way to the stadium.
You say incredible, meaning you could mock it for the rest of the year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, and you know, unfortunately for him, it was really cold out that day.
Fantastic. As usual, you know, Demp's bringing it, the yay game. You know, Demp, this one was 105 miles an hour, this segment alone. That's how good you were.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it, man. You're making me feel good. I'm getting ready to go do some TV. So I positive thinking. I'm feeling good about this morning.
Coaching you up, way above hitting speed. All right, hold on. That's Ryan Dempster. And that's a good question from Burrow, because you think about it, you would think the discipline of the team would say everybody meets here and you got to ride the bus. It's no, get over it.
Baseball's different. Football,
show up on
everybody
time.
Travels together. It's a kind of a different deal.
You sound so surprised by that. Good question by Ryan Burrow.
Yeah. Sponsored by
You should have seen the look on his face, Ryan.
I love that all the Cubs riding their bike down. Like,
pretty funny.
That's awesome.
You see like 12 Schwinns going down Lakeshore Drive.
Pinella lived on Lakeshore Drive. He used to say he was going to take his bike, and I told him, if you do it, you got to wear the full uni. Don't get dressed at the park. Wear the full uni.
Well, who is
it's like to be going to the game and you see Joe Maddon ride by you on his Schwinn?
Jim Riggleman, I think, used to take the L in uniform to Wrigley.
Is that right?
I think some manager of fairly recent vintage, last 20 years or so, did that.
Sandberg was reminding me. I forgot about this. Ozzie and Pinella did a bike riding commercial. You remember that?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. They did. That was before Divvy bikes. How about that? They could just take Divvy bikes.
Make it all city sponsored event.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The Donald is not really a plans guy. He's not really a facts guy either.
Trump says he wants to run the nation like he's running his business. God help us. I'm a New Yorker, and I know a con when I see one.
Think about everything you learned as a child, no matter where you were raised. How can there be pleasure in saying you're fired? He's trying to tell us he cares about the middle class. Give me a break. That's a bunch of malarkey.
Biden would have crushed Trump. He would have crushed him. Ro Khan joins us from Philadelphia. Yeah, I felt like after the Biden speech, the buses were running outside and he was going, who's with me? Let's go!
Biden is sneaky good. He's that guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy that you just don't see coming when you think he's kind of goofy. He's Uncle Joe. He's kind of wacky. He'll say anything. And then he gives a speech like that last night, and you go, oh, where was this guy?
I'm telling you.
Right?
You don't want to. Don't make him angry. Don't feed him after midnight. You'd see Jill came out, too. It was like calming down Mongo from Blazing Saddles. It was like, okay, all right, calm down. Shh, shh, it's okay. I love Biden, man. He's been in... He came in here many, many times, and you know, our friend Mark Doyle is like another son to Vice President Biden from Rags of Honor, and the stories that Mark has are tremendous. But he's the guy that you see. When every politician isn't genuine, he's the guy that you see, because the 8,000 background stories and stories I've heard about Biden are just, they back up everything he is and everything you saw last night. And, Ro, you know this. Here's a guy who, about 2 minutes after he gets elected to the Senate, his wife and daughter are killed in a car accident. His sons almost die. Last year, he loses his son, Bo, to cancer. I mean, the guy's been through so much.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason he didn't run.
Right.
I think it's because of Bo. I believe that people were looking at him very seriously for this. And, you know, what's interesting is I don't think that he would have fared well in a primary against Hillary Clinton, though. I mean, it would only have worked if Hillary Clinton had chosen not to run.
Yeah, see, I think that's why
that wasn't going to happen.
No, once she was in, she was in. But I think that's the main reason he stayed out. So
that's,
I think the
Bo
thing was
factor,
a piece of it, without a doubt. All right, so yesterday we had a tremendous lineup of speakers who, it doesn't matter if you're the most Republican amongst all Republicans, if you're going to be fair about this, you got to look at that lineup and go, they were good.
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing here is you've seen some of the most talented political orators or oratory.
That's a big word that Rose is trying to use.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm trying to use it. Speaking,
and by the way, I don't know why I'm calling you Rose. Ro was trying to use.
My mother does too.
It's my nickname.
That explains a lot.
No,
it's
orators.
Yes, orators. Yeah. Some of the most absolutely talented people ever to be in political oratory, there we go, ever on the stage for the last three nights. I mean, you saw Bill Clinton, who is, you know, I mean, the guy is classic. Although that speech went about, an hour too long, but he could have cut it down. Michelle Obama is amazing on stage as well. And Barack Obama gave the speech of his life last night.
Yeah, I agree. He was great.
There was a moment in that speech where he criticized Trump for saying, we will not be ruled. It's a little bit ironic given some of the you know, onerous things that that his government has done, his administration has done, in terms of, you know, you know, healthcare and things like that. Oh, you're not, you know, the promises have been have not actually been met in that. But if you put all of, you put reality aside, it was one of the greatest political speeches of all times, because he says we will not be ruled, and then he goes into that we the people moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the crowd, I mean, it was you didn't have to think about it. It was like a you know, getting, you know, your knee tapped. People just jumped up
right
on, you know, onto their feet, and there was this moment where it was just soaring. And he was great. He also went on, I think, just a few minutes longer than he probably should have. There were moments he had that room sort of at the end of that. If he were able to, like, grab that microphone, drop it, and go, "Good night, everybody," it would have been the greatest, you know, political speech of the 21st century, maybe of the 20th century. Not of the 19th. There were some better ones than the 19th, but that was. But thank you very much. I have to say that, otherwise I'm going to lose. People are going to call me. They're going to call me names. But the fact is that he was on top of his game last night. And then when she came out, which, by the way, we had no guidance on, none. That was
those are almost always scripted. I think that's possible if that was an ad lib moment. You don't have ad lib moments in these things. And obviously security needs to know where, you know, code name Alpha is. But I don't know that Obama knew she was coming out.
Well, the business of the Secret Service, we get to know things about, you know, who's going to be in the building and who isn't, because they change their protocols around us. Right. So they tell us, OK, here's what's happening, not what time or why, but they tell us, here's how you're going to have to move in the building. Here's how you're not going to be able to move in the building, blah, 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 blah. And so we were moving around, you know, knowing that the president was going to be in the building. So that was the highest level of security you can have, is when he's in the building. And so it was very restricted in terms of how we could move around the building. Now, it had to be the same for her, right? So there was a way to sneak her in, and knowing, you know, the networks were kind of surprised by it. It was a really interesting moment. And then getting out, Steve. Last night we got off the air at midnight, and we got Eastern time. We got downstairs. We got across the lots. We got to our vehicle, which, by the way, is a white Impala.
Nice.
I am calling White Lightning as a complete
honor. It's an homage.
To you, sir.
It's an homage. Yeah.
It's an homage. It's, yes, an homage. Sure. So we got to White Lightning, and we tried to get out of the parking lot, and everything stopped. And we're like, now what is going on here? There's nothing moving. And then we see motorcade after motorcade leave. And
sure,
this is about an hour after the speech. And I'm thinking, now, what did they do? They all hung out, and then they moved them. You know, I thought, like, it's like a concert. Like, they bring the lights down, they keep everybody inside. And the interesting thing is that all the delegate buses and all the stuff that moves delegates back up into Philadelphia from this area about 5 miles, you know, down south of downtown Philadelphia, they weren't allowed in until the motorcades were clear.
So they had an after party and screwed up the exit plan.
Oh, my gosh. It was crazy. And I thought, hello, helicopters? Don't you people use helicopters? Trump would have used a helicopter.
Speaking of Trump, before we run out of time, these things are insulated. And even though it's all politics, how many people knew what Trump said by the time you got on the air yesterday when he threw out that? Do we have it? Do we have the clip, Jake? He's grabbing it right now. We'll play the clip for you. But this is Trump at a press conference. He didn't have to hold. He just couldn't stand being out of the spotlight. If there's a bug light, he's going to run near it and say stuff like this.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Just unbelievably stupid. I mean,
We had Michael Steele on yesterday, and even Michael Steele, who I love, he's like a brother to me. Used to run the Republican National Committee. He's a guy who he was like, well, I don't think he was saying that was trying to get the Russian government to, you know, break into or to hack into our systems. He was like, if you've already done it, you have them. And I go, that doesn't make it any better.
No, it doesn't.
That is no better. It is, we had Ben LeBolt on. We had a bunch of people on yesterday. Ben LeBolt used to run the campaigns for Barack Obama. I mean, it's stupefying. Even amongst people, I mean, obviously Democrats are going to take this and run with it, right? But, I mean, I stopped and I thought to myself, how is it possible that the guy who is the Republican candidate for president of the United States, and I've got you and I both, right? I mean, our politics are fairly similar.
Yeah.
We're sort of center right guys.
Yeah,
I cannot imagine how, and I voted Republican a number of times in my life, especially for federal offices. I cannot understand how it is possible that this party, the grand old party, has got a guy up there who, and there's no question about that. He is extolling a terrorist act, a cyber terrorist act by the Russian government. And he doesn't understand. When he gets a three-ring binder, which he, I believe, if he hasn't already gotten, he's going to get next week, that has all the stuff that goes on. They give them the full security briefing.
Yep.
The same briefing that they get, the president of the United States gets. And I thought he was supposed to get it this week. Maybe he gets it when she gets it, and they get to see it. And he sees what Vladimir Putin is up to on a daily basis, let alone his history. He knows this is a guy who tried to kill a Ukrainian opposition leader using poison in his soup.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
He's killed other people using poison. I mean, this
he really is. I mean, Putin is Dr. Evil. And that's the thing Trump doesn't understand. And for Trump, and I said this morning a couple times, it's not even so much that Trump said it, because Trump will say anything. It's that he thought it was okay to say it. That's the real white light of stupid, that he, in his mind, has done so little prep, so little work, so little understanding of what the job is, that he thought that was an okay thing to say in public on a microphone.
He wants to win at any cost. And if his cost is humiliating people, which is what he's good at, right? That's what he does in negotiations. He humiliates, he tries to make you feel badly about yourself, and then he wins on that. If he thinks that he can do that to the American people and get away with it, it says something about us. And I don't love Hillary Clinton.
Never thought in my life she'd even be on the radar for a possible vote.
Right. And I agree with you. I mean, there's so many things. And especially now, when you know what happened with the DNC, you know what happened with her own email server. Oh, my God, what a stupid move that was. There are things about her. I think she's a pretty centrist politician in terms of policy, actually. I think, she talks a left game, but she and Bill never really operated as much under that, with the exception of healthcare.
Right.
But we're already there. They've already done that.
Right.
But I just cannot believe. I mean, it's a very tough thing. That's why Ruth Bader Ginsburg and I have gotten a timeshare in Auckland, New Zealand.
Well, that's good for the two of you. But in the meantime, where am I going to live? It's Ro Khan.
We have a little room in the bottom.
Oh, God, 3 o'clock today. Sorry. Wrap it up from Philly. Thank you, buddy. We'll come back. Quick discussion with Andrea before she takes the big story at the bottom of the hour right after this on 720 WGN. 927. Andrea's in Philadelphia as the DNC wraps up today and tomorrow. Big story in a couple of minutes, but you talked to Durbin a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, Dr. Durbin, boy, he was really riled up today. He was really not happy with Governor Rauner, and I'm kind of surprised that was the focus that this took just a few minutes ago. He just thinks Rauner is breaking up the state and breaking up the morale in Illinois. So we did a one-on-one with him, and some of the reporters had come up, and somebody asked if he's going to run for governor. And he said, I'm not going to talk about that right now. I'm focused on getting Hillary Clinton elected president, and then we'll talk about that later. But it didn't seem to me, Steve, like that was completely out of the realm of possibility at this point.
Well, that's the type of thing that it's good to get up in his face and find out about. But I agree, you ought to be focused on the present, and the present is now. All right, so you'll have more in the big story?
Yeah, we'll have more in the big story, and we'll find out. Durbin had some really harsh words for this whole Putin email gate 2 here as well.
All right, coming back with that in a couple minutes. By the way, I have an assignment for you before you've come home. Remember when I sent you to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Remember when I sent you to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last week? Right?
Yes.
I want you to go to the Liberty Bell Park. I think it's called Independence Park. It's like 6th and Market downtown. Yeah, and I want you to go there where people are all caught up in patriotism and history, and I want you to ask them who they're voting for.
Will do.
Yeah, and then we'll play some of that back. Well, it'll have to be tomorrow's show. We'll play it on tomorrow's show.
That sounds great.
All right, stand by. More with Andrea coming up.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
He remains the busiest man in America. It's our friend Orion Samuelson. Where in the world are you this morning?
Well, this morning I'm doing our weekly television show at the studios in Aurora, where Max Armstrong and I, every Thursday, put together a one-hour show on RFD-TV. But I have to tell you, and I'll be talking more about it on the Saturday morning show, you know, I love airplanes and have flown in a lot of them around the world, but I had the greatest plane ride ever last Sunday when I flew the B-17 Flying Fortress. What a day and what a flight that was.
That's a lot of history right there.
Oh, about 14,000 of these four-engine bombers were produced in World War II. They were the workhorse in the European theater particularly. And now only 11 are flying anywhere in the world. And I got to fly in one of them before the plane moved on to Oshkosh for the air venture this week. But it was a great, great morning. Clear skies, green landscape below me, just magnificent.
The pilots are the types that take them around the country regularly, or who flies it these days?
Well, there are several, but that's another interesting point, because I sat in the cockpit for the flight, and the left seat, the captain, was Lorraine Morris. In the right seat was her husband, Ken Morris. Ken is a retired Northwest captain, and Lorraine, who is a wisp of a woman, is flying the 777 to Rome for United probably four or five times a month. The only married couple in the world qualified to fly the B-17.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, and they must like each other. They're like Steve and Johnny flying it around. They must like each other because they must be together all the time.
Well, they said they would not get into any arguments over who was making lunch or anything like that when they were up there. But, they're a great couple. They've been friends for years, and we've worked together on the Vintage Wings and Wheels Museum out at Poplar Grove, Illinois, where they have the airport, and so great time. But something else, looking at that landscape, I mentioned earlier this week that in my six decades of covering agriculture, I have never seen crop ratings as high this late in the growing season, because every Monday we get the crop progress reports, and they consistently are higher than anything I've seen in Good to Excellent. Turns out nobody else has either, because these are record high crop conditions at this time of the year.
Do you make of that? What's the reason?
Well, because we've been getting timely rains. Temperatures have been hot, but not too hot. We're two-thirds of the way now. You know, we did corn porn early
yes,
in the season.
Yes, yes, yes. Corn detasseling, yes. Corn porn.
Pollinating season is over for about three-quarters of the corn crop, and didn't really get those extreme temperatures that could hamper it. Now we look to soybeans, because August is the critical month for soybeans. We need good rains during August, and so we'll see if we get them. So the other thing that's happening that I want consumers to know about, you should be seeing lower prices for beef and pork, because cattle producers and pork producers are beginning to hurt with the prices that they're getting. Yesterday, we had a sharp drop in the lean hog futures at the Merck, and that was prompted by a huge drop in pork bellies, because, you know, we eat a lot of bacon, but apparently you and I haven't been eating quite as much as needed during this summer season. So
I wonder why that would be. Well, I guess it's been such great barbecue weather, but you would think people would be using bacon to spice that up as well.
Well, you would think so, and maybe they will before the season is over, but it's interesting what impacts – the market prices for producers, but also for companies. You saw McDonald's yesterday. Well, because of lower prices in the grocery store, more people eating at home and preparing meals at home, and that affected the McDonald's earnings report yesterday. So a lot of factors that you really don't think about when you're thinking about our most basic industry, which incidentally I have not yet heard mentioned in either the Republican or the Democratic conventions. It's sort of the forgotten industry that without it, none of us would exist. But anyway, the impact of agriculture and prices affecting companies like Deere & Company, affecting companies like Monsanto and fertilizer companies, all feeling the impact, and we're seeing layoffs now in some of those companies.
Your recognition of the lack of recognition of agriculture by either convention, it's not in any way. It's an absolute truth, and the fact that it hasn't been addressed in any form is ridiculous.
It is, absolutely. The only time since the primary started, or since the campaign started 4 years ago, the only time they mention agriculture is when they're in Iowa, and then they talk about renewable fuels, ethanol from corn, soy diesel from soybeans. But they feel if you're in Iowa speaking, you better do that or you'll lose the Iowa vote. But that's about the only place I hear it.
Where will you be today? Because I'd like to think you're kicking back after you finish production, but I know you won't be.
Well, we're just back from Arizona and the Mayo Clinic for our annual, and no surprises, which was good. But I'll spend some time in the gym this afternoon, walking, and then, yeah, I do have a quiet day until we head into the weekend. We've got a lot of county fairs going, and next week, somebody wondered when state fairs get underway in the Midwest. Next week, the Wisconsin State Fair will start on the 4th, and the Indiana State Fair will start the same day, so we'll be going to those events. I'll be going next week up to Redwood Falls, Minnesota. We'll fly Air Orion, which is a little quieter than the B-17, and we'll fly up there for Farm Fest, which is really the first big outdoor farm show of the summer season. So,
are you sure you're 82?
Yeah, I did check, and even a vascular surgeon at Mayo said, no, I wouldn't do anything with your legs because I'm having a little problem with legs. And he looked at me and he said, so how much time on the treadmill every day? And I told him, and he said, and you're 82? Yeah, I said, I am. And he said, don't let anybody cut your legs to improve circulation. He said, I make my living as a surgeon. I wouldn't do it because you're doing fine.
Well, how about that? That's nice to hear.
It really was, because I had seriously been contemplating some surgery to improve movement of blood down to my feet and that sort of thing. But they said, just keep walking.
Yeah, and here's the thing. As much as you've been cut open in the last 6 to 8 months or so, maybe we just count your rings to make sure you're 82.
I don't think they did when they put in the cow valve and the pig valve in my heart, but as I love to tell everybody, I can now literally say agriculture is in my blood.
No doubt about it. The best there ever was. It's Orion Samuelson. Thank you, buddy.
You bet.
82. Who's he kidding, 82?
Unbelievable.
Going out to the fairs all weekend. Unbelievable. Guy just never stops.
Do you get tired talking to him?
Yeah. I need to lay down after I'm talking to him.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
I wish I could play guitar like this. There's Dave Bennett on the guitar.
Took years of practice.
I've never taken a guitar lesson. I don't own a guitar. Never really tried to play, but I wish I could play like that. It doesn't work that way, I suppose.
I'd have to try it sometime.
There's always time. Come on.
You think?
Yeah.
There is a... everybody thinks all I do is bash Trump. I've got a nice story here about Trump. Turns out that Trump... This is a endorsement. It turns out that Trump is not the tough-talking, screwy, ignorant candidate they say he is. but is actually a wise politician and a prescient presidential candidate that could free America.
They say that?
Yeah. This is a column in Kim Jong-un's controlled North Korean propaganda paper. The rest of the quote is, Trump could free America from living every minute and second on pins and needles in the fear of a nuclear attack from Pyongyang. Dave, I've been meaning to talk to you about your stress over a nuclear attack from Pyongyang.
It's not so much the pins, it's the needles.
That's the ones that'll get you. Yeah, without a doubt. Shift gears here. You got any gifts you got to buy soon?
Let's see. Yeah, my daughter's birthday is Sunday.
I got stuff coming up, too. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the in-a-box culture that's going on now, where you can get just about anything in a box? You can get memberships and stuff in a box shows up. You can get clothes. You can get, like, Trunk Club, for instance. Trunk Club will design a wardrobe for you. Mm-hmm. You can get snacks in a box. Mm-hmm. You can get all sorts of things sent to your house in a box. If you're, a comic store type, mm-hmm. there's a specific company that will do comic book stuff every month in a box.
You send me beer in a box.
Yeah, because you're a lush. There's something called the Something Store, which may be my new favorite concept. It's the Something Store, the joy of surprise. You know what you get in a box?
It's a surprise, I'm guessing.
You get something. Something Store, I'm reading from the website. Something Store operates simply. We'll send you something. An item selected randomly among the many products from our industry for $10. And you'll discover what your something is when you receive it. Something could be anything. Could be headphones. Could be bullet. Could be a watch. Could be garden tools. Could be a knife set. We guarantee your something will be worth at least $10. Could be worth much more. It's from the Something Store.
But you're going to pay at least 10.
$10, and you get a guaranteed $10 value.
That's pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, guaranteed. And you get something. Something. You get some. It's a 5-star rating. So, and you know the ratings on the internet, they're never made up. They're never trumped up.
Of course
at all.
Not. No. Why don't we order something?
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to order something from the Something Store and see what kind of crap they send us.
Perfect.
Or is that the crap store?
Yeah, that's a different store.
Some crap. That's somecrap.com, where you send in $10 or $11. And Wendy, have you ordered from somecrap.com and they send you some crap?
I buy so much crap. I would love it. We all have so much crap, don't we?
Yeah, there's no question. I go out in my garage, I pull out the ice blue Chevy Impala, and I look at this.
Blue Thunder.
I look at a wall of boxes that have accumulated from about 14 moves, 15 moves.
I know. Why don't we go through those?
I never unpacked.
But you won't throw them out.
No. Well, I might have to unpack them someday.
Yeah. Might be something you need in there, even though you don't know what's
in
there.
Yep. Don't touch my stuff. Settle down, Francis. It's 9:56. We'll come back and find out who Wendy's mystery guest host is in just a second. And we're back.
How are you early today?
Yeah, way early. I don't know what happened.
You didn't put forth your 100% today, did you?
No, I did, actually. You know why? Because I always give 110% on the show. I know this guy. I know this guy.
What's up, Steve?
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I got to go over there and like, prop your eyes open a little bit. You look a little tired.
You know what time I get up there, smart guy?
Was it 3 o'clock?
Yeah, 4.
Four o'clock.
You know, I could call you, but I figured you'd be up anyway with your
Please
kids.
Do. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for your call.
Are you doing TV today?
I shuffled it around to be Wendy's special co-host today.
Yay. Wendy's special friend.
Yeah.
Yes. I have a lot of special friends.
Identify yourself.
Hi, I'm Frank Fontana.
Frank, of course, is a world-famous designer. Like, Dave, tell Frank right now. Tell Frank just a color in the room of your house. Like a dominant color scheme.
Actually, don't even tell me. I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to tell you.
This is
Fontana, the psychic designer.
Svengoolish.
Okay.
I think your main overall color is on the lighter side. I'm thinking taupe-ish and an almond flavor.
Okay. This is a little weird.
I'm saying white. You have a lot of white.
No, not really. I think Frank's right on it.
Boom. See that?
Yeah.
I was going to say
it's a gift.
A kale
I feel
color.
It. I could see.
All right, now what should
color.
He have in his taupe-ish almond milk colored rooms?
A shot of espresso.
I don't mean what should he drink. He's got drinking covered. But what do you recommend design?
Looking at him stylistically, why don't you stand up for me? Give me a little 360.
Let's see your butt.
Nice. Wow, look at that. Nice.
That's for Wendy.
Oh, Dave. Yeah.
Thanks, little, Dave.
He's got his khaki
drop
pants.
It like it's hot. There you go.
God, he didn't even fight it. He just spin it around like a stripper. Unbelievable.
I'm getting the sense that there's a traditional styling here with a slight contemporary flair to it.
It's like a psychic that goes, your problem is either at work or at home.
Right. Yeah. Somebody recently passed away in your family.
You're kidding.
No. That didn't happen.
I'm kidding.
But can we call my wife and see if he's right?
You don't even know what your house
no,
is?
No, I know.
If you use enough fancy words, nah, I mean, dude. Yeah.
Guys don't know this stuff except Frank.
Your family room. Can you tell me what color the walls are in your family room?
Yeah, it's like sort of tannish.
No, that's incorrect, Dave. You're going to have to
taupe-ish, almond, milkish.
Taupe-ish almond, yes.
Yes.
Dan Hampton will be on the show tomorrow. Tonight, special surprise at the final night of the DNC. You remember Chachi was at the RNC.
Scott Baio.
Joni is going to be at the DNC
Yay!
Tonight.
Yay!
Yeah. Aaron Moran.
Is that accurate, Andrea? You're still in Philly. Is Joni going to be at the DNC tonight? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Joni does not love Chachi anymore.
Mm, shame.
Buttons. Who's got the buttons?
I thought we had Andrea live from Philly. Can I punch her up? Is she there? Yeah. Okay.
Is Joni still alive?
There you are. Is Joni live at the DNC tonight?
I have a friend named Joni who's here, but it's not Aaron Moran.
So I would say
that's a no. But you know who I saw yesterday? Speaking of big name celebrities, Billy Baldwin in the concourse.
I think you're still in Cleveland if that's a big name celebrity.
Really? Because he's one of the non-talented Baldwins. There's Big Beefy Baldwin, who I think is Daniel.
Beefy Baldwin.
Well, and Alec.
Someone said, oh, that's my third favorite Baldwin.